Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. September 10th, 2020. Medium published my new article Caring for Each Other Heals. For quite some time we have been going through a full-blown crisis that has shattered every aspect of our lives. Everything that we had known has crumbled. We need to start over, but we don't know how. So instead, we wait and hope for a vaccine. But lingering is very bad for us. It only makes the necessary changes more painful and slower to occur. The virus is hitting on all levels, biological, emotional, and social. However, its blows are not random. They have a clear trajectory, to separate us from each other, meaning exercise social distancing, and reconstruct our relations in a non-detrimental fashion. The virus may be a pathogen to our bodies, but it is a remedy to our society. The sooner we acknowledge that we will not return to our lives before the virus, the better it is for us. To do that, we must understand what we are going through and what is happening around us. The virus is hitting on all levels, biological, emotional, and social. However, its blows are not random. They have a clear trajectory, to separate us from each other, meaning exercise social distancing, and reconstruct our relations in a non-detrimental fashion. The virus may be a pathogen to our bodies, but it is a remedy to our society. It may be hard to see this at the moment, with all the contradictory reports and misinformation we are fed from all directions, but if we follow the orders given by the authorities, regardless of whether or not they are helpful in curing our bodies, we will find that they are helping us, perhaps unintentionally, build more caring communities and enhance our mutual responsibility. We shouldn't regard the instructions to wear masks or wash our hands, or keep a 6-foot distance as intended to protect ourselves. This would only perpetuate the current, deleterious attitude that got us where we are. Instead, we should follow these instructions in order not to infect others. Whether it does or does not prevent contagion is really unimportant. What is critically important, however, is that this completely reverses our attitude toward others compared to the attitude we usually exercise. If the majority of people adopt this attitude, to think about the neighbor's health and take appropriate action to support it, it will revolutionize society. It will not matter what prompted the change, but simply the fact that the change has happened will work miracles. And since it would not happen were it not for the coronavirus, we will find that it's the virus that has brought us to a new level of connection among us. Naturally, in such a state of mutual concern, the chains of infection will all break and the virus will vanish in a matter of weeks. But more importantly, we will find that our society has risen to a new level of concern for one another, a new level of cohesion, and we will not want to return to the alienation, loneliness, and suspicion we had harbored before the onset of COVID-19. Instead, we will want to keep developing the new agenda that caring for each other heals. My new article on LinkedIn, Oceans Apart, Israeli and Jewish Separation is Bad News for the World. Some 6 months ago, the first COVID-19 patient passed away in Israel. Now, after breaking another record in the number of new confirmed cases and widening our lead as the country with the most infections per capita, we are finally beginning to realize that there is a real problem here, that people are really dying, and that we are losing control over the pandemic. We did not become a nation for our own purposes, but in order to be a light unto nations, to show the world how love can cover all the crimes, all the hatred, and through our own example lead the way to unity, so they could do the same. I warned about it months ago. I said that if we don't do what we must, we will be among the countries that will be struck the hardest. And not only in confirmed COVID cases, but also in unemployment and social disintegration. We shouldn't be surprised that this is happening. We didn't do what we must, so the pandemic is spreading in Israel and around the world faster than the forest fires in California. And if people blame us for it, they are only echoing what our sages said thousands of years ago. No calamity comes to the world but because of Israel, Yevmut 63a. COVID-19 is certainly a calamity, but it will get much worse unless we Israelis begin to act as Israelis. And here is what being Israelis means. Our nation was forged when we agreed to unite as one man with one heart. We didn't like each other, we didn't agree, and we didn't want to be together. We came from different clans and tribes from all over the Fertile Crescent, and we joined Abraham's group because we liked what he taught, that we should love each other above our differences. However, it's not as if we really cared for one another, not at first anyway. But there, at the foot of Mount Sinai, after escaping from Egypt, we finally agreed to unite as one above our disparities and disputes. At that moment, we became a nation. And even though we fell into belligerence and struggles soon after, we always knew what we are meant to do. In the words of King Solomon, "Hate stirs strife, and love will cover all crimes," Proverbs 10:12. Yet, we did not become a nation for our own purposes, but in order to be a light unto nations, to show the world how love can cover all the crimes, all the hatred, and through our own example lead the way to unity, so they could do the same. Today, although we have regained sovereignty, Israel is anything but united. It is torn apart into sects and factions, classes, political views, private sector versus public sector, and religious versus secular. Each faction of the nation wants its piece of the pie to be as big as possible regardless of its own size or needs, and regardless of the needs of other factions in the nation. Moreover, the Israeli society as a whole is oceans apart from American Jewish, not just physically, but mainly emotionally. There is a deep chasm between the way that American Jewry perceives Judaism and Israel, and the way Israelis perceive them. This makes the two most predominant Jewish communities in the world perpetually at odds with one another. The book Sefer Emet writes, "The truth is that everything depends on the children of Israel. As they correct themselves, all creations follow them." Currently, we are not correcting ourselves, we are only breaking apart more deeply by the day. COVID-19 saved us. It stopped us, en route to annihilation. It enabled us to reflect on our society and start fixing it, making it more cohesive and caring, and by that, at long last set a positive example to the world. We didn't take the opportunity, we blew it. So as the world looked in awe as we were prevailing over the virus in the beginning, now it looks in bewilderment as we are falling behind all other countries due to our surrender to the whims of our factions and sects. Once again, division is the source of our troubles, yet we are too busy indulging in righteous indignation to recognize it. It is written that Israel is a stiff-necked people, and indeed we are very obstinate. Being obstinate can be advantageous, but it also has its limits. At some point, a critical mass of people will point a blaming finger at Israel and say that we are the cause of all their troubles, and nothing we can say will convince them otherwise. If we get there, Israel will be in big trouble. Before it happens, we must do what we were meant to do from day one, unite and in this way set an example, so the whole world will look at us, and do the same. Surprisingly, the book of Zohar, Ahemo, wrote about our situation and the solution to it nearly 2,000 years ago. "Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to also sit together. These are the friends as they sit together and are not separated from each other. At first, they seem like people at war, wishing to kill one another. Then they return to being in brotherly love. And you, the friends who are here, as you were in fondness and love before, henceforth you will also not part from one another. And by your merit, there will be peace in the world." The Times of Israel published my new article, "Here's Why There Is a Jessica Krug in Every Jew," an elaborate reply to readers' comments on social media. On Sunday, September 6, I posted an article on my blog in Times of Israel titled, "There Is a Jessica Krug in Every Jew," where I explained that the tendency, or wish, to eschew our role in the world is common to all Jews. In sum, it is expressed by the argument that Jews are like all other nations. In others, it is expressed in objection to anything Jewish. Others still choose to convert to other religions or marry non-Jews and raise their children without any, or hardly any Jewish traditions and symbolism. Jessica Krug, who chose a rather unusual way to reject her Judaism, by pretending to be of a different religion, is therefore no exception. She simply chose an unorthodox mode of action, but her wish is a conscious or unconscious wish that every Jew harbors, though of course, not everyone acts on it. Jewish self-hatred through the ages. One of the comments on the post in Toy said the Jewish strength is precisely in disagreement, but civilized disagreement. Disagreements, certainly, but civilized? I don't know about that. There have been cases of what one might call civilized disagreements, such as the case of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. However, history is laden with testimonies of our uncivilized disputes and the misery they had wrought on our heads. There was nothing civilized about the arguments among the leaders of the nation that caused the ruin of the first temple. Our sages describe those leaders as people who eat and drink with one another, yet stab each other with the swords in their tongues, Yom 9b. There was also nothing civilized about the arguments between Hasmoneans and Hellenists, who were Jews who wanted to introduce the Greek culture and belief system into Judea. The war between them was a full-blown civil war, and to this day we celebrate on Hanukkah the victory of the Maccabees over their own coreligionists, who were assisted toward the end by the Greeks, to no avail. Speaking of civil wars, we must not forget what the Jews did to each other in Jerusalem during the siege before the ruin of the Second Temple. The slaughter, starvation, and even cannibalism that Jews perpetrated on each other within the walls of the desecrated city preceding the Romans' conquest of Jerusalem are still today a harrowing reminder of the depravity of human nature and a mark of disgrace on our people. Interestingly, our sages never attributed our downfalls to foreign rulers, but to our own vices. In the First Temple, they said that it was ruined because of bloodshed, slander, and incest among us. In the Second Temple, they said that it was ruined because of unfounded, baseless, hatred among us, namely hatred for no reason. It wasn't as if our sages thought that Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the First Temple, or Titus, who destroyed the Second Temple, were faultless. They knew they weren't, but they didn't place the blame with them, but with our own divisions. The book Morvar Shemesh writes, "The prime defense against calamity is love and unity. When there are love, unity, and friendship between each other in Israel, no calamity can come over them." Likewise, the book Likutei Halakot states, "The primary element of correction is the advice to gather together," meaning that there will be unity, love, and peace in Israel. As for the evildoers throughout the ages, our sages simply said, "Goodness is given by the good, and wickedness by the wicked," Shabbat 32a. In other words, our own misdeeds against each other bring upon us, bad people who punish us. But so far, we haven't learned the lesson. Centuries after the destruction of the temple, the fiery hatred of Jews toward Jews with other views still divides us. There was the 18th century struggle of the followers of the Vilna Gaon, GRA, who tried, and partly succeeded, to convince the Ukrainian authorities to jail the followers of the Baal Shem Tov and perhaps execute them using false allegations that they were plotting against the government. Then there was loathing between German Jewry and Polish Jewry in the 19th century, between Orthodox Jews and Zionists in Poland in the late 1800s and early 1900s, between assimilating Jews and Zionists in Germany and Austria at around the same time, between the revisionist movement and the Zionist organization in Palestine in the 1930s, before the establishment of the State of Israel, and between the Zionist Organization of America and Reform Judaism in America before, during, and after World War II. In all those cases, Jews not only disagreed with one another, They tried to extinguish one another politically, or financially, or physically, or all the above, and no means was too extreme. In my book The Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism, I illustrate the common process that unfolds in all of our tragedies: mutual hatred and division, the rise of a Jew-hating ruler, and the bitter end of the Jewry in that place. It always follows the same procession, and in all those cases, Jews even assist the prosecutors in hunting down their dissenting brethren. The surprising demands of rabid anti-Semites. Today, we are seeing the same trend developing in America between Jewish supporters of the Democratic Party and supporters of the Republican Party, and between Jewish Zionists and anti-Zionists. It is still not as violent as in past divisions, but it is already as caustic, and the trend is very clear. If this mutual enmity continues, an oppressor of Jews will surely rise, and probably sooner than later. When that happens, it will be impossible to prevent the tragedy. Ironically, all this self-hatred comes from the nation that conceived the imperative that defines absolute love: love your neighbor as yourself. In fact, we did not officially inaugurate our nationhood until we agreed, at the foot of Mount Sinai, to unite as one man with one heart. And immediately thereafter, we were told to be a light unto nations, namely light up the road to unity to the entire world. This is why when anti-Semites accuse us of causing all the wars, I cannot blame them. In the absence of unity among us, they have no example to follow, so how can we expect them to unite and make peace with one another? It is no coincidence that some of the most notorious anti-Semites were also very perceptive in their grievances with the Jews. Henry Ford, founder of the Ford Motor Company, for example, wrote in his infamous book The International Jew, "The world's foremost problem, the whole prophetic purpose with reference to the people of Israel seems to have been the moral enlightenment of the world through its agency." Elsewhere, he adds, "Society has a large claim against the Jew that he begin to fulfill. The ancient prophecy that through him all the nations of the earth should be blessed." And most astonishing is his advice to sociologists to learn from the ancient Jews how to build a role model society. Modern reformers, who are constructing model social systems on paper, would do well to look into the social system under which the early Jews were organized. At around the same time when Ford wrote his book, another anti-Semite, in another part of the world, wrote another book. Ukraine-born Vasily Shulgin was a senior member of the Duma, the Russian parliament, before the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, and a proud self-proclaimed anti-Semite. In his book What We Don't Like About Them, he explains what he thinks Jews are doing wrong. Shulgin complains that Jews in the 20th century have become very smart, effective, and vigorous at exploiting other people's ideas. But out of the blue, he takes a sharp turn from the trite canard and declares, "But this is not an occupation for teachers and prophets, not the role of guides of the blind, not the role of carriers of the lame." Subsequently, just like Ford, this rabid anti-Semite invites the Jews to lead humanity. Let them rise to the height to which they climbed in antiquity. And immediately, all nations will rush to their feet. They will rush not by virtue of compulsion, but by free will, joyful in spirit, grateful and loving, including the Russians. We ourselves will request, "Give us Jewish rule, wise, benevolent, leading us to the good." And every day we will offer the prayers for them, for the Jews: "Bless our guides and our teachers, who lead us to the recognition of your goodness." But in order to be teachers, we must be what the people of Israel are meant to be, united as one man with one heart above all our differences, setting an example of unity to the entire world, and thereby being a light unto nations. This has been our vocation from day one, and this will continue to be our vocation until we carry it out. It is not an easy one, and I cannot blame anyone for shunning it and denying its validity. But denial won't deter the detractors, who will come and punish us, once more for not doing our duty. unity, and memories from Europe. So yes, we disagree on everything, but doing it in a civilized manner is not what we are meant to do. What we are meant to do is love each other even though we disagree. This is a much harder task, but it is the one required of us, and we can only pull it off if we unite and help each other out. We didn't only give the world the motto, love your neighbor as yourself, we also gave it our voot-tudadit, mutual responsibility. Indeed, we are mutually responsible for one another in this task, too. Only if we all pull together, we will unite above our differences and the world will follow our example. But if we don't pull together, if we fall victim to our mutual hatred, the world will not forgive us, and we will experience what our people went through 80 years ago in Europe. I wish I didn't have to write these words, but this is the truth as I see it, as I learned from history and from my teachers, and it is my duty to do what I can to save my people from annihilation while it is still possible. I lost almost my entire family in the Holocaust. I cannot sit idly by when I know what can prevent it from happening again. All in one boat. Day by day the situation is getting worse all over the world. This indicates that humanity is not moving in the right direction and is not sweetening its condition. Instead of following the path of light desired in the eyes of creation and the Creator, humanity, due to a lack of understanding of what is happening and what needs to be done, follows the path of suffering, the natural development of events, that is, under the pressure of forces that oblige us to advance. So, we follow that way as if there is no other choice. It cannot be said that there is a real awareness of evil, but it is clear that the state is bad and may not be corrected anymore, but will only deteriorate more and more. The crisis affects everyone, both ordinary workers and managers. Many already understand that this is not just a virus, but a phenomenon that will change our whole life. This is becoming more evident every day. At the same time, people still hope that if a cure for coronavirus is found quickly, they will be able to return to their old life. They do not understand that the virus does not hit our health, but much deeper. Nature began a global treatment for humanity. It did not seek to confine us to our homes and distance us 2 meters from one another, forbidding us to communicate, celebrate weddings together, sit with friends in a restaurant. Nature had a completely different intention. It wanted to give us room, free space, time, and the opportunity to understand and feel why all this was done, for what purpose. This is not just an epidemic, but a higher, integral, global, and special phenomenon. It is difficult to grasp it right away, but humanity is already approaching it. Blows are the surest way to reach our minds and hearts and make us aware of our condition. We must try to explain to people why nature does this to us. Nature is an integral, global mechanism that acts on us, and gradually advances us along the path of evolution, that is, the program of creation. We are developing according to a higher plan. The science of Kabbalah explains to us what kind of program it is and what steps we need to go through. It is impossible to escape from this program. You can only change method of our progress toward unification, the goal of development, from bad to good. Likewise, in raising children, if a child listens to his parents, then he is treated well, and if he does not want to listen, then you have to put pressure on him and even punish him. It is said that he who spares the rod hates his son. Proverbs 13:24, the goal is already outlined from the beginning, and we must come to it. Soon we will be left without money, without food. The sooner we explain the true reason, the fewer blows we will get that are intended to lead a person to a new, correct order of life. We cannot wait for this to be done by the forces of nature that beat us, and seem devoid of compassion and feelings. They did come after we had not heeded the warnings of nature and had not made an effort to go on a good path. It is necessary to explain to everyone that it is not the epidemic or the virus that is to blame. There is simply one force that acts very harshly and is forced to put pressure on us, like a parent on naughty children. We must develop, no question about it. But we can choose a good, easy, beautiful, and fast path if we direct our hearts and minds to the goal to which nature leads us, to our unification and organization of life here on this earth, in a simple and good form. On the material side, you need to keep what is necessary. The main thing is to direct yourself toward spiritual development, that is, toward connection from heart to heart. People feel more unhappy day by day because they cannot see the image of the future that nature is leading us to. They think that it is just a disease and one day we will recover from it. Let us spend money on it, some will get sick, some will even die, but eventually, the epidemic will end, and we will return to normal life. Every country is struggling to return to its usual life. Every politician convinces us that he has a solution to restore the old way tomorrow. This is known and desirable to everyone because we understand how to live in it. But it is impossible to reverse the process of evolution. We see from history that we pass from state to state and move on to the next stages. Now nature requires us to move to a new stage where humanity must become closer to each other sensually. In addition, we must take care of our home, our planet, and together take care of our future. After all, in this, we all depend on each other. We cannot make distinctions between peoples, countries. We must think about the global state. Let each of us be an egoist who thinks only of himself, who does not care about anyone else in the world, but if we want to survive, we must think about everyone. After all, we are all in one boat. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, August 19, 2020, writings of Balha Sulam, the Avot, Mutual Guarantee. To change the paradigm of life. Question: money is the equivalent of the value of goods and services. For the past 200 to 300 years, people have been fighting for equality, including in wages. Yet, how can we talk about equality if we do not know the initial qualities of a person? After all, the amount of effort per hour of work for each person is different. Does it mean that there can be no economic equality? Answer: it does not matter. We separate what a person should give to society from what one should receive from society, and we do not place any connection between them. What I can give to society depends on the education I receive. I am ashamed to give less. What I receive from society depends on the fact that I am a person who exists in this world and I need to get a certain number of benefits, which I use and can exist and realize myself. Today, the world has already come to the point where, if we wanted to, we could give this to practically everyone. Question: how long will it take for a person to change the paradigm of their life? Answer: this depends on the widespread dissemination of the correct education. If there is a society around that will do this and live like this, then people, especially the younger generation, will understand that this is the atmosphere we should exist in. We will come to it as a result of education, from a sense of necessity, and not because we have to suppress ourselves. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, June 4, 2020. The Building Order to the Creator. The soul is not built by will, as if they are erecting a building, but they are waiting for the Creator to build it. The correct appeal goes through unification in the tent to the Creator. I only order this construction and I do not even know exactly how the Creator will build it and in what form. And it does not matter to me at all. I want it to come from above, especially in our time when we are building the third temple within us. It is said that all of it descends from above in the contrast to all the previous stages, the first and second temples. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, August 31, 2020. The Law of the Avot, Mutual Guarantee. According to the law of mutual completion. Question. You say that new values should include knowledge of the global laws of nature and their observance in family relationships, in particular, in cases of conflict between generations. Can you name at least one such law? Answer, this is the law of mutual completion. For example, in a family, one exists in a certain volume on the natural level, the smallest are the most important. And the older and stronger a person is in the family, the more he owes the rest. This type of law should also exist in society. Question. For thousands of years, there have been conflicts between women and men, between fathers and children, between nations and countries. What does nature want to show us? Answer. Nature wants to demonstrate that we must rise above these conflicts to become one family. And in the family, there is mutual completion. Everyone makes their own feasible contribution to the common piggy bank, a small child with his participation and warmth, the adult with his greater participation, greater contribution. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, May 21, 2020. The difference between Kabbalistic and socialistic ideas. Remark. The ideas of Kabbalah are very similar to socialist ideas. Basically, this process was necessary and very correct. My comment, but this is outwardly. Internally, a completely different force pushes and pulls the Jews forward, the idea of revealing the upper force of nature over all differences in the general development of each other, in the general connection between all the peoples of the world. Remark, the Soviet Union also promoted ideas of uniting the whole world, giving everyone rights, etc. My comment. But all this was for the sake of simply feeding people. The idea of the Bolsheviks and communists was to make a material paradise on earth. Kabbalah says that we cannot achieve a material paradise, it is enough to provide ourselves with everything necessary for existence. And the most important thing is to reveal the unified power of nature in your unity. After all of nature, the entire universe, is one force called the Creator. We must reach its level, and only then will we find true existence. From CAB TV's Systematic Analysis of the Development of the People of Israel, December 28, 2019. The Germans of the Laws of Moses, Part 5. You cannot hide your nature. Comment. A famous German philosopher of the 19th century, Ludwig Feuerbach, wrote, "The Jews have maintained their peculiarity to this day. Their principle, their God, is the most practical principle in the world common, namely, egoism, and moreover egoism in the form of religion. Egoism is the God who will not let his servants come to shame. Egoism is essentially monotheistic, for it has only one, only self, as its end. The essence of Christianity." My reply, this is an example of how one can understand the essence of the Jewish religion in quite the opposite way. Question, that is, he saw monotheism specifically within the framework of egoism and self-love. Isn't egoism a god among other nations? Everything is trivial. Egoism manifests itself everywhere, among both religious and secular. Answer, the fact is that even now many Jews are assimilated in places in America and Europe. It is not the first generation that is dissolving among the nations of the world, and we do not even know whether they have Jews in their family. But people can guess it from certain signs in their behavior, from the way they communicate. Although this person seems to be completely removed from Jewishness and there is no Jewish upbringing in his pedigree for several generations, still, if you look closely, you can see that he is a Jew. You can even tell whether he belongs to the Levites or Kings. You cannot escape this. It comes through in some habits and behaviors, although one may not even be aware of it. But people feel it. From CAB TV's Systematic Analysis of the Development of the People of Israel, August 12, 2019. 9 Important Rules in Life. Remark, people have developed several universal rules of society. Do they stem from the Kabbalistic point of view, and do we need to adjust ourselves and follow them? The first rule is, try to fill your life and the lives of your loved ones with love. This way you will attract favorable circumstances and prosperity. However, displaying aggression in any form will manifest itself in a constant deterioration in the quality of life and in failure in general. My reply, this is partly true. However, it is better to say, show love to others throughout your life and not just to your loved ones. Then your life will be filled with a completely new, upper meaning. Remark, there is absolutely nothing random in life. With your thoughts, words, actions, and deeds you shape your current reality and your future. My reply, this is correct. But only if we understand how to do the right thing. Otherwise, we may think that we are doing the right thing, and life all of the sudden trips us up. Doing the right thing means to move clearly toward the purpose of creation, not as we want or think, but in the way that it actually corresponds to the program of nature. Remark, the next rule is related to the previous one. Our thoughts shape the events and reality of each of us. Learn to think positively and you will create a reality that will please you. And vice versa, rage, anger, hatred, envy, and pride attract failures and bad luck. My reply, I cannot create my life in my fantasies. I have to do this by properly adhering with others, in the correct connection with others, I with them and they with me. If I create my life out of this good connection, then it will really be good. Question, many people believe in God. Nowadays even atheists are coming to the conclusion that there is something that controls us. Can a person be connected with the upper universe? How can we connect correctly? Answer, there is no individual who controls us. God does not exist. There is a single law of nature, which we must obey. Then we will begin to attain it, and through good connection with it, we will really become masters of our own destiny. We will become gods provided that we are completely similar to this upper force, the quality of bestowal and love. Remark, another rule. No matter how serious your offenses are, the universe still loves each one of you. Remember, however, that it is giving us what we need at this very moment, which is known only to it. My reply, yes, that is correct. You can say so. Remark, one of the main universal laws is the law of equivalence of form. If you do not love yourself, then others will not love you or will neglect you. My reply, I need to love others and only others. Only for their sake and only for them. This is the only correct rule. Question, where can I find an example of this? Answer, in the fact that now you love yourself egoistically. Imagine that you have to switch over and love others in the same way. Remark, there is absolutely everything inside a person, power, fame, honor, money, and beauty. The task is to release all the abundance into the reality around you. Answer, indeed, if a person gives everything he has to others, he will be the happiest, the wisest, the most corrected, and everything will be good for him. Question, what does it mean to give everything he has to others? Answer, he will be bringing them to the most comfortable, the best, the most perfect state, not to what they want, but to what actually exists at the top of nature. Just like a mother who wants to educate a child, she does not do everything the child wants, but does the best possible for him so that he reaches the most perfect state. Remark, do not classify people around you into good and bad. Is there a correct criterion by which people can be evaluated? My reply, of course. A person who does everything for the benefit of society is good and vice versa. Remark, for the universe, there are no such concepts as guilt, punishment, and so on. It is important not to ask what do I need all this for? But, why do I need all this? My reply, this is correct. Question, does the universe have such concepts as guilt or punishment? Answer, improvement. Correction. It is to lead a person to the need to be in complete bestowal to everyone. Question: what is the most important rule of the universe? Answer: love. Question: how can one learn to love? Answer: you cannot learn that. You have to teach yourself. Constantly, in a group, in connection with your own kind, according to the method of Kabbalah. This is exactly the result of the correct implementation of the method of Kabbalah. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 7, 2020. Mutual care. Question: do you agree with the statement that parenting is necessary for the parents themselves? After all, when I bring up children, I improve myself. Answer: of course. However, future parents need to be educated before they have children. And even after that, it is imperative that parents are clearly accompanied by all sorts of relevant organizations and specialists. Question: in different cultures, relations between generations develop in different ways. There are cultures in which parents are very helpful to their children, and there are cultures that believe that children should develop themselves. How much do you think parents should help children and until when? Answer: I think parents should help their children all their lives, but only to such an extent that would not constrain the children and would allow them to become independent parents themselves. Nevertheless, parental care for their children should accompany them throughout their life. Likewise, children should mutually care for their parents. Question: do you think that at some stage children are obliged to start taking care of their parents? Answer: naturally. No one can replace this relationship. You can inundate the elderly with money and various types of services, but if the children do not take care of them, no one can replace them. Comment: this is especially important today. Answer: unfortunately, today we have done everything to avoid taking care of either children or parents. From Cab TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, May 21, 2020. New Life 1276. Using power as a means for bringing about change.
Shalom lachem, toda shetem mitzarfim elenu.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshadael. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Leitman about exerting force in order to change reality. Many times in life there are things that we're discontent with on the personal, social level, and the question is, how much force, when and why should we exert in order to promote change? Yael, please. Yeah, we know that in nature, practically in whatever you do, you have to apply force in order to move from state A to state B. Even for solid to become liquid or gas, you have to heat it up. You have to apply force. Now, I want to ask about the social system that we're living in. When we look at people, at a group of people that want to change something, that are discontent. So first of all, they express themselves in whatever way they can, and then comes the question, should we exert force, and how much force should we exert in order to accelerate the process of change? And actually on today's show, we'd like to check, should or is exerting force still affected in our time, and can it really lead to change, real, essential change? And I'd like to open with the question, is or does any change demand the exertion of force? Dr. Leitman, changes, according to what I study and see, always come from nature. It seems to us that it comes from people, but people are operated by the forces of nature, and they have nothing in and of themselves. And therefore, we're all operated. The question, if so, is when we reach, now that we're reaching a new era, that we're already starting to talk about how we operated, who's operating us, how can we help each other, when do we operate ourselves, how can we help each other to operate or be operated. So here the question is, what can we really do? Where can we really do it? Where is our free choice? And in what form? In the form of thoughts, desires, actions, physical actions, social actions? Or is everything that we do, that it comes from nature, that it's nature that awakens us without asking us, and we simply implement? And it's also not that important, really, how do we implement it, but we simply do the way nature wants us to. From what point and on can we say that we are being activated, operated, that we have this feeling that there's someone who's operating us on the one hand? And on the other hand, how do we react to it? Suppose I'm being operated by the forces of society, I'm activated by the forces of nature, maybe I'm getting certain thoughts, desires from someplace, from the universe. There are different such theories. What do I do with it? Meaning, how do I myself start working? Do I have free choice? Can I discern exactly what's mine and what's not in activating myself? How do I influence others? Maybe I'm simply operated like a yo-yo that threw me nature, or maybe there are other theories, conspiracies, that I'm being operated and I operate without asking us, in short. This is a big question. This is a question about free choice. And here we are still in accommodation of different thoughts and different kinds of theories. What exactly do you want to ask? I want to ask about the exertion of force. We see that in nature, in order to move from state A to state B, you need force in order to generate that change. You need energy for things to really change. I want to ask, does every change in reality demand the exertion of force? Every change demands, needs the exertion of force. Simple physics. Okay, we said that changes come from nature. I want to understand how nature acts. We see that in nature, many times, in order to achieve what we want, we also have to exert physical force. Dr. Leighton, physical or more inner or more external, doesn't matter, but forces. I want to ask about physical force, because it seems that if we turn over a table or we exert some external physical force, things change. People are willing to do for us things that previously they were not. In order to exert physical force, or by exerting physical force, it seems that it makes a strong impact on our reality. What do you think about this, Dr. Leighton? I think that it doesn't have to do with the force itself, but with politics, with the structuring of the country, society, like we saw it in the United States, like we see it now in the Ukraine. In every place you have such and such, you have thugs on the one side and those on the other, and they operate. I don't exactly understand what conclusion can we deduce from this. Yeah, eventually the strong rules, Dr. Leitman. No, money does. Yeah, and in nature, there's no money there, Dr. Leitman. There, it's forces, the balance of forces. Forces. The forces of physics, chemistry, biology, zoology, doesn't matter what. But all in all, these forces that feel a certain force on themselves, being operated on them by nature, they act accordingly. You have the eruption of volcanoes, you have tsunamis, you have earthquakes, you have a problem in the animal kingdom, not only with the stale and vegetative, but yeah, it's nature. Oh, and to add about human society, many times when you're discontent with something as an individual or as a public and you feel the need to make a change, you can talk about it, try and convince others about the change that you think that has to be made. Eventually, if things don't move, you're asking yourself, should I exert, apply force? When we look at history, we see that big changes happen as a result of the exertion of force, revolutions and so on. Now, money is also a kind of force, meaning there's physical force, there's the force of the power of money, but force is force. In your opinion, when should the public exert force in order to get what they want? I don't think that there is a time for the usage of force, I think, or at least I'm talking about our time. We need to only see the actions of nature on us and how we are going hand in hand with the actions of nature, facilitating these actions to exist and be realized in the best and quickest way. Oh, and suppose you and I were citizens of a certain country and we're discontent with how things are. So we can vote once every 4 years. We did it, didn't help. When can we make a decision that, look, we have no choice, we have to act with force? Dr. Leitman, if you're talking about physical force, I don't accept that at all. Because our physical force, the force of the fist, is an egoistic force that is destined to fail. Oh, why? Dr. Leitman, because nature does not act according to the force of the ego. Nature is entirely arranged in order to bring us to a global integral interconnection. Yael, what do we lose as a result of using the power of the fist? What can society lose as a result, Dr. Leitman, that it's not going along with the process determined by nature? Yeah, and if it doesn't, then it means that it can't solve the problem, Dr. Leitman. Of course, to the contrary, it'll bring it to a dead end, that we're making problems for ourselves. Like, for example, that God forbid there's someone sick, and I don't exactly understand his diagnosis, and then I give him medicine that's not fit for him, and then I put him in a much more serious state than he wasn't to begin with. Yeah, many times it seems that it's a solution that can help, Dr. Leighton, seems to us, because we're egoists. As an example, now we're living in an egoistic society that wants to profit as much as possible and have a ball. Nature is already putting obstacles before us, not allowing us to keep doing it. If we're talking on part of ecology, earth, humanity, we see that we're reaching very bad and even dangerous results. And still we want to continue. So what do you do? Tell me. So this is what I want to ask about. You're saying that we're all the time acting in the same way, and we see that it doesn't help us, Dr. Leitman, but our ego does not allow us to do anything else. I don't want to change according to what nature is demanding, to burn less, to less deforestation, burn less fuels, different things, not to destroy nature itself, not to steal vegetative or the animate, that we have to work less, that we have to get only our basic needs for life and not everything that we're doing in order to make money and throw it away later on to dump it into the sea. And this is how we ruin nature. Previously you said that the power of the fist is ruled out because it is in the opposite direction of that in which nature wants to develop us. So what should the public do in order to generate positive change? First of all, we have to understand what is nature demanding of us, to be in balance, to be nicely interconnected with one another. For us to see what we really need for a normal life and not to make anything beyond that, because by that we're only destroying our natural resources. Okay, suppose this is the more advanced state that we have to lead society to, the country that we're living in. And you and I, we agree that that's how we should be. But the country that we live in doesn't behave that way. How can you and I and others that share our opinion make it so that our opinion will be practically expressed, implemented? What force should we use in order for this, Dr. Leitman, the force of explanation, to explain to everyone what can we come to if we will take care of nature and if we continue dealing with nature and society the way we do now? It's like giving the wrong remedy to an ill person. I want to ask about the power of publicity or explanation. I'll give you an example. Many times in life, you come to some office, and they're not especially friendly, and you see that nothing's moving. You have a real problem that they're supposed to solve, and there's no one to talk to. What do you do? After you explained and explained and explained, you say, no choice, I have to turn over a table for something to move. You turn over a table, and really something starts moving. Comes the manager, this, that, suddenly they find solutions. Before there weren't, now there is. This is a small example for using the power of the fist, that where you couldn't do anything through explanation. You said, there's no choice, we have to go for a stronger force, the power of the fist. Is this correct for the life of a society, of a country, Dr. Leitman? No. Well, and why not, Dr. Leitman? Because according to what I know, according to my opinion, in my opinion, nature is demanding of us a mental inner participation, intellectual participation, emotional participation. Yet, what is that force of explanation? Dr. Leitman, I want to make out of you a person who will agree with my attitude, approach to nature, to understand what is that illness that I see in nature or in society, and what is the treatment that I recommend to give to society, and what result do I want to come to? Yeah, and what does the power of explanation do? Because like Owen said, many times we try to explain and it doesn't work. We're trying to talk to that clerk and, you know, we can't explain neither what the illness is, not about what we think the right treatment is, and even if we did explain, he doesn't necessarily agree with us. Dr. Eichmann, all in all, we don't have to run in front of the train. But we have to sit in the train, but to really explain from the very first wagon what is going on and where we headed. Yeah, can you start explaining, Dr. Leitman? Yeah? For example, now, we're in a state where many people are unemployed. Soon, they'll run out of means, really. Because the countries themselves, too, will run out of means. And then, what will happen? What are you going to do? And everyone's demanding work. There are up to 40 people per one workplace in Europe demanding work. There are such places. Up to 40 people per workplace. What do you do? So we have to understand, and we can't make workplaces, fictitious workplaces. The main thing is for people to sit and work because it costs us much more and we don't have any money left in our treasury. So what do we have to do? We have to sit these people at home. Half of the population at least you have to sit at home because it's the cheapest solution. Cheaper than having them in factories and offices where they're not needed, for them to sit at home and learn like students through the media lines, something that we will let them study, good things, in order to develop their intellect, emotion, make them a bit more unique. And for this, we have to give them some kind of compensation. This is the cheapest and best possible solution. Owen, let's take the example that you gave. Suppose there's a country in Europe and there are millions over millions that today have no work. These millions, at a certain point, are saying, okay, that's it. We have to take to the streets and force the government to provide us with, I don't know, our basic needs, something that we're not getting, in short. There is a furious mob taking to the streets and wants to make a change in the country by the power of the fist. What are you telling them? I'm not going to tell them anything besides one thing, that this is the law that we're now determining in our country because we have no choice. It's not that one party wants this, the other wants that, but it's simply that we don't have money, we don't have factories, we have to close down half of them because they're useless. No one's buying all this merchandise that they're making. So what are you going to do? You can go out and break showcases, windows, you can kill people, you can do whatever. But the country has no means to provide them with what they're demanding. They're saying, give us. What are you going to do? Therefore, I'm saying you have no choice but to eventually bring them the method of education for them to sit at home and learn, study, become educated, and for that to pay them, this is the work. This is the work, to write this down as work. A person who's sitting at home and studying, this means that he is working. It's considered work. So you're talking on part of the country here, Dr. Leitman, of course, Yael, that it's supposed to give citizens all these things. I'm talking about the citizen, the frustrated person who can't generate the change that he'd like to see. He wants a better life. He wants to live. Dr. Leitman, please go ahead. Why can he come up to someone and demand? So I'm asking, what can that citizen, what do you recommend him to do? He has to get help, and that he's taught what can the country do and what can't it. And in your opinion, should he exert physical force? And how will that help him? He can go break showcases, no problem, kill a few people, please. By that, he won't be able to improve his situation. Maybe it will convince the country, Dr. Lightman. But it's not that they have what to give him and they're not giving him. If they would have had gold and money and they don't give it to him, that's one thing. But there's none. We have come to a state where we remain empty. In the meantime, we have. I'm not saying that we don't. There are billions. But over the upcoming winter and autumn, they'll disappear. And then what are you going to do? In this kind of reality that you're describing, where we're going bankrupt, the country is going bankrupt, the force of the fist will not help. What force can help me change my situation for the better, Dr. Lightman? To balance out society, and only that a small part of society will work in order to keep things going, sustain the country, and the majority will sit at home with the children and will learn through the media lines about the state that we're in, the era that we're coming to, and how should we behave in this new era, going back to what we have today. Still today, there's lots of money. There are billions. They're doing different things with. And again, I'm that furious mob. I feel that I'm not getting what I deserve. And I want to come and convince you forcefully. If you didn't understand when I was talking nicely, then, you know, I was a tanker. We used to say, what doesn't go with force goes with more force. So, when I want to apply more force in order to get what I want, what am I missing out on here, Dr. Lightman? You're not reaching a solution. It's possible that in the meantime, you forcefully grab out of the hands of the country something that maybe you think that you deserve. I'm not talking about that. But when you grab these things, it'll help you for some time, but it's not a solution. Because by that, you're only using things the way they were. And what now? So you'll be able to survive for another few months. And what you're grabbing from the country now, you won't be able to grab in the future. Suppose Israel, I think they even mentioned numbers, I don't remember. But how many billions the treasury has already spent, I think that there's much more there. And what then? So, according to what you're saying, looking at the long run, Dr. Lightman, not that long, in a year from now, suppose in a winter, what force, then the force of the fist won't help. We have to apply a different kind of force that will eventually lead us to a better life. Dr. Lightman, also take into consideration, let's call it force majeure, different eruptions, fires that happen here and there. It really hastens things. Oh, and unfortunately, our time's up. Last question. If the force of the fist will not help in the long run, what force can help us make a positive change? To build a balanced society. That's it. That everyone will do what society is demanding of them and will get whatever society can give them. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.